Welcome to this episode of George is Made Ruthless, your only podcast for detailed breakdowns of the George Lopez Show, episode by episode. I'm your host, Kyle, and I'm not the only one loco for loco. I'm joined by my co-host, who you don't call him an Ernie, or he might go full Benny, my co-host, Tim. How you doing, Tim?
Yeah, hanging in there in San Diego.
It's not, you guys aren't on, like, lockdown.
Yeah, we're okay. I mean, probably should be, but it's where the world's at right now.
Yeah. Well, that's good. I'm glad to get some good news there. Because unfortunately, I got some, I got some bad news, Tim.
Lay it on me.
We're not going to be able to talk about the episode of George Lopez where George and Annie hire a maid played by Barbara Eden, I think, with Dream of Genie, who quickly cooks and cleans her way into George's heart but never cleans the house, and a jealous Benny decides to steal money from Max and blame her to get fired. We actually have a really good episode. We're going to be talking to creator Randy Stone about his current Kickstarter, Bullet. Well, thanks so much for joining us, Randy. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Yes, so I'm always excited when we do Kickstarter ones, especially with active ones. I think at this point, like, it is premier publisher of good comics and comics. Not good. I mean, I obviously like all comics, but it's like such an exciting time. And normally I wouldn't do, we're kind of on the broader on the like creator focus type stuff. So normally I would avoid like the elevator type stuff, but for Kickstarters, obviously it's kind of important to the project. So I briefly, what is Bullet to you, and what's kind of the story behind it?
So in general, it's a superhero slash romance. It's set in the Silver Age. Basically, we feel that it could easily slide into the early days of Marvel. It's got that old school, yet a really modern approach. I teamed up with Jordan Alsaka, Kath Lobo, and Scatani to produce this book. It's beautiful. Yeah, I don't know what more I can say. It's just, it's a wonderful story. I took a backseat to a lot of it. It was my original idea, but having these collaborators on, they took over and did an awesome job. So I was as much a fan as everybody else experiencing it for the first time. I love it. I think everybody else will.
I mean, it looks great, and it has multiple things that I love, and I have questions regarding that a little. But I think one of the interesting things you kind of touched on, and you mentioned it in the kind of pitch for the project, was this was an idea you had a while ago, some other creators, and then it kind of was on the back burner. Then you kind of brought it back with this current team. How has the story evolved, and what did this kind of team, especially kind of working with Jordan kind of co-writing it, how has it evolved for you, and what do you feel like the team has brought to the story that you really originally kind of hadn't conceived?
Yeah, so taking basically a decade off in between, I came to Jordan because I liked his writing. I think he did a good job with younger character, these ones, school, college, university. But basically what I asked him to do was take what I had and make it better. And he did that by stripping off the things that were unnecessary, trimming the fat, and then building up the parts that really needed the work, like building up the relationship with Joanna. That was something that obviously she was there the whole time. He really made her. So I think that was probably the biggest thing he brought to the project. And then just fine-tuning, obviously his dialogue places. Just really pulled it off, like that feel of a Silver Age book. And then, of course, moving on to Kath, she's a perfect blend of that. Really old school sensibilities. Like, it has a classic look to her work, but it's also very modern. She's got these sharp lines, vibrant colors and all that. So she kind of brings the same thing that we were trying to do, which is balancing feel with a really modern take.
Yeah, and I think both, like you said, Jordan and Kath are really good at, like you said, kind of towing that line, which I imagine is difficult. And you kind of really get that. I think you guys have a 17-page preview that you can read. And I think, like, the idea of Silver Age, I think, especially to a lot of, like, current, maybe younger readers, well, even, I guess, people my age, like, there is a somewhat, like, whimsy and also goofiness to it. What do you think were kind of the tropes behind that you think work well in kind of the current modern day? Are there things, like, are there hallmarks of that genre that still kind of work to this day?
Well, yeah, I think it's timeless. I mean, superheroes are that kind of mythology that every generation grows up with these stories. And whether it's the Silver Age or the 90s when I really got into comics, it's all the same thing. This goes back to a more fun and at times goofy, like we played with that a little bit. But it's definitely a more fun era where we don't have heroes burdened by all the grim and gritty stuff that the 90s threw at us. And then as we get to more modern stuff, it's all very realistic. we tried to have the science behind it without getting into it so that it made sense to us when we wrote these. But we don't get bogged down in that. It's just like, this is what happened. This is what's going to happen. We just run with it. And as a speedster character, I guess.
And that, I mean, that's one thing too, for you guys as a team, how do you also then kind of toe that line with familiarity with kind of Flash, like the quintessential, I think, for a lot of people character. And like, how do you kind of, does that help you as a writing team with people who kind of go in knowing the general idea behind a speedster character? That way you don't have to kind of explain everything, but because I think a lot of people go into the story knowing. Is that something that helps as a writing team? Yeah.
Yeah, you know what? I'm a Marvel who got into Flash. I have a couple Flash comics that Ringo drew. Jordan is a big Flash fan, so he probably was able to either lean into those tropes or avoid them completely. I don't know exactly because I'm not that familiar with the ideas. But I think it's a starting point for sure that you understand, okay, here's a fast character, and we go from there. There isn't really much you need to understand about that. His power set is very simple. He can move really quickly.
With that sort of power set as a creative team as well, is that something where you then would lean kind of, I think, heavy on cast ability and kind of, do you guys have a clear idea of how you want to represent that in the comic? I know in the preview, I love him typing on the computer and the way she kind of visualizes the speed. Is that something you guys had a set idea on how you want to visualize this power set and capture it in kind of medium of the book?
Yeah. So I think there's those classic things, even just Spider-Man moving across the page where you have those sort of ghost images of him, you know, three times, and then you get the solid one on the right side kind of. So I think in the script, I probably said like multiple hands, you see this with that kind of in mind. But then also with current technology, you could have all those blurs, right? So it does kind of balance that. We've got another, again, several times in one panel we could throw out. But yeah, Kath could play with that and just having it. There's a bit of both.
For you as a writer and on a lot of the projects you've done, kind of working, they're co-writers or multiple artists, and again, kind of a large swath of different artists and people in the industry. Does it help? I know you kind of came up in the realm of art and you in art and you co-assisted on some set. Does that help kind of the writer brain, or does that help kind of having that full range in your tool belt write in it, or also kind of work with the larger creative teams that you've worked with on other books?
I think so. At least I'm not difficult, and I appreciate the job that they when I'm laying out a page, like I kind of have something in mind, and that's not necessarily something I expect in art. But it's just, okay, this makes sense to me, putting it out, that's five panels, that makes sense. I might say this one's larger, but really, once it gets to their point, they're better at it than me. Otherwise, I'd be doing it myself. The whole reason I bring them on is to get into their bees. So it probably gives me a starting point, understanding what is possible. You know, some writers might say in a panel, the character does this and does this and does this, where it's supposed to be one moment in time, where I know the limitations of what the page can be drawn at. So I wouldn't ask for something like that, I suppose, unless maybe it's Bullet who's doing all these things in the split second that he does. But yeah, I think understanding where they're coming from is probably the biggest
thing. You wouldn't ask an artist to draw a splash page with children riding horses and cars. I'm trying to think of all the other staples of
that'd be cruel.
Awful things to draw. Yeah. There's got to be a story. That would be to draw. At this point, this is your fourth Kickstarter, and three successful. This one, I think at this point we're halfway, and you're more than halfway. Like, I feel like a completion for you. What at this point in the kind of your understanding of Kickstarter have you learned going into this fourth one? Do you have a better understanding of what works, what doesn't work, and like kind of how you want to approach these projects now?
You know, the hardest thing is just getting the word out. And every time I go in, or maybe after every one that I've wrapped up, I think, okay, next time I'm going to have more done ahead of time. No preparation. The book itself is done. It's ready to go. All 40 pages complete. But as far as like maybe scheduling tweets, so I don't have to be on there several times a day posting, saying, hey, everybody, look at this. So I'd say I learned my lesson, but every time I start a new one, I forgot that. So, yeah, I don't know. Building a project page, I think I'm doing a pretty good job at that, expressing what the project is and getting people interested to take a look at it. But yeah, just still getting the word out. So having me on here, I really appreciate that. Blast. Hopefully some other eyes will take a look at the project.
It's, I mean, I feel like that's the hardest part in, I mean, in Kickstarter, obviously, but I think just in comics in general, and this is something we talk a lot about with creators. I mean, it's at this point, like, it's an industry where you, even if you aren't a Marvel book, ebook, image, like, it just, like, falls to the creators to be able to understand and navigate their best, like, their own self-promoter, I think, yeah. A lot of times. Like,
it's, well, such, where's their marketing department, right?
Right.
You're on a Marvel book, and you're the one getting more press on it than they are.
Yeah, and it seems like that. I mean, that, and that's kind of where, I mean, if you're going to do that work, it seems like might as well do it for a Kickstarter where you're kind of being able to tell the stories you want to tell at that point.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why I'm self-publishing too. I've definitely had a few books put out by publishers and good experiences. But just thinking that if you're going to take a cut of this and really the most you did was retweet a couple of my messages, then maybe I should just be doing it on. So hopefully that's something that I can build on here, project I do.
And with that, I mean, with the altruist comics and kind of your, I guess, a brand and overhead of that, is that like, is that something for you, or do you see yourself kind of expanding, exploring ideas for other people, or is that kind, yeah, of help you to do consolidate your stuff?
No, it's first for me, of course, mm-hmm. a way to get my book, but definitely my long publish other people's work. I did an anthology, and it actually was very cool that several people on there had never had anything. So for me to be able to do that, and, you know, I'm creating a comiXology profile for them because they don't have any other work, their first book, really, that's really cool for me to do that. I hope to get to the point where I'm actually soliciting pitches. I feel that's a little ways off, and I want to prove to them, first and foremost, that, yes, I can succeed with my books, of course, as well. Not just, yeah, I'll publish a book and it doesn't get seen by now. So in the next few years, I really hope to get to that.
With the anthology, you're talking Swan?
No, that basically was an anthology as well, in a way. But that was kind of, I was curating it really specifically creators, three stories. I found people created those teams on these stories. Crime Pays is what I was referring to.
Oh,
and that was just open up. So a bunch of short stories with a crime theme. So I'd love to do another one, maybe like a horror book. I can pitch their short stories and build on these projects and hopefully have a solid Kickstarter for that. And, you know, do the same thing for fresh new talent that has not been given an opportunity. Hopefully I can produce their work for them.
Well, that's something, if you look at all your projects across the board, is kind of the diversity of the creators you're working with, whether a lot of female talents, a lot of color or non-Americans. Is that something, I mean, obviously, like, they're all bringing insanely, like, talented work to it. The art on Swan, like, everyone on that is fantastic. Like, it's so good. But also, is that something kind of in mind, in your head, like, as someone, yes, who's kind of curating it, like, bringing that talent to people who otherwise wouldn't necessarily, and not necessarily wouldn't have that opportunity, but, like, like, it's such a tough industry as it is, but, like, especially for kind of the marginalized and,
yeah,
is that something kind of your idea it's behind huge altruism? For me.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a straight white guy, and so if there's one straight white guy in the book already, I don't need three others. So it's something I'm very conscious of. I would never just hire somebody for that sake. I don't want to check a box and call it a day. I mean, I'm finding really talented people, like you can see, people I'd like to work with, but yeah, looking at those databases like creators of color, you know, going through the Twitter hashtags, you know, black or visible women, or, you know, all these things, if I can find people there, and, you know, if it's them or another white guy and they're both equally talented, why would I be going like that? And, like, sorry to them, but I really hope that I can be in a position to give them that opportunity and shine a spotlight on marginalized creators for sure.
Sure. It's, I mean, it's so, and maybe this past year with a pandemic and spending more time online, Twitter, like, just the breadth of talent out there is insane. It's like, there's too many good people. I would never want to be an artist because there's so many. And then, I mean, Tim knows, it drives me nuts that I gotta see a Rob Liefeld Joe book. Like, get someone else. That is my bane of my existence. I won't have you cut. But for Bullets, you have it as a four. Page book, but it's not like a number one, number two. Is the book kind of a contained story, and then you have plans to branch out if it works, or is something you want to revisit? But, like, for the people backing it, is this kind of a 40 page, like, contained story that any more outside of that?
It's a self-contained one shot. If this is all that ever happened, be happy with it. That said, we do have more in the works. Working with Jordan, we've got three other scripts in the can, and they deal with things down the line with Dale's lineage. But as this one stands, it's a perfectly contained story. So that's all you ever need. But I hope that it's hugely successful. People will love it, and they'll want to see these characters again, and we'll go from there.
Well, and I think one of the only selling point I needed to see was obviously the Silver Age, but I mean it's not a date night issue, but it's built around the romance, and you mentioned kind of the appeal of shoujo manga, which we had David Lopez, Tim, was that we were talking about, like the lack of comics to really kind of explore love, but also kind of like date night stuff, or just like that type of stuff, like where manga like kills it.
Romance, but not like comics.
Especially Super Age.
Yeah,
it's something that's like so underutilized, and again, manga's kind of like capitalize on that, especially with shoujo. Like, and that's something that, you know, I at the same time, I mean, like superhero comics are just a large love letter to like soap operas. Like, it's just a giant soap opera, but it's missing the kind of like love and romance element. Was that something, again, kind of tackling that in this, in importance to bringing that, especially with the character of Bull, who's like the way this story is structured, he's kind of looking back on his life, bringing the romance in and having that work, was like, how difficult was it?
Well, I think basically my initial script, Joanna was there and just didn't play a major role. I mean, obviously she was a love interest, but when Jordan retooled it, he put a bigger focus on her and their relationship. And it's obvious, I mean, that's an important time in his life where he met her because of these powers developing. But as their relationship bloomed was when he was starting to... I don't know if there was anything specific like, yeah, we got to put out a romance. It's just that was natural for the story itself and to make the characters real. Yeah, it wasn't intentionally a romance book. It just happened. And when you get that final book together, you realize, yeah, this is actually as important as the fighting bad guys stuff.
Well, and like you said, I think it's interesting. That's how kind of like, if you look at like early Spider-Man, like 70s, grounding it in those type of problems versus like what we see in the 90s where, oh no, someone killed my girlfriend. Obviously, yeah. Like Gwen Stacy. I mean, that thing. But like, you did the crime and
death and gun,
like death and
and the like cover.
And tackling those kind of ideas where, you know, the 90s is like so hardcore, but losing kind of the, like, you can still have, you know, normal people problems. Like, I gotta take two different kids to two different soccer practices. That's almost as bad as like finding my wife in a fridge. Not in this. That's not as embarrassing. But like those are like problems that early Spider-Man dealt with, and they still work and they're still relatable. You know, sometimes, again, finding your girlfriend in the fridge isn't really to most people, hopefully. So like, yeah. So like this type of stuff, like, I think it works and it should work more because it is like, you know, the majority of readers are this is what you can relate to versus a larger problem.
Yeah. My first published work, Champion, it was very much about the real world struggles, like just dealing with a job and even trying to get into comics. Like, I had to have a regular job and I still do, but trying to get in and do this thing on the side when you've got a relationship. And I didn't have kids at the time, but I do now, and even more relatable to that. But this superhero who had the weight of the world on him, that he had to save everybody constantly. So he couldn't hold down a job. He wasn't there for his kids and all this stuff because of that responsibility. It was the dark side of that with great power. It was the complete opposite of him. Like, Bullet is fresh and fun and all that, whereas that one, he was bogged down by all the life stuff. But yeah, I don't know, actually. Yeah, I can see the two sides of it, where you can play off of that aspect stuff that will relate to, but the negative consequence versus, yeah, you know, you're a young guy just finishing up college and falling in love for the first time or whatever and playing with that side.
Yeah, I think, like you said, I think it's kind of a good example of having the context around that. Again, like, if you have a character burdened with power and he also has a wife and kids later in his life, like, what are you experiencing then versus someone in college or getting out of college, like, is like totally different. Me 10 years ago versus me now, my problems are completely different. They're still, you know, life-ending problems, hopefully, but like, there is like a different mindset in approaching that and making that work, and the character is what makes good character. as you kind of, with this Kickstarter, and again, like you said, having done four, one last year and then working on this one this year in launching it, what have you seen as Kickstarter kind of, as it's grown, and what can it do for comics? Like, as someone who's kind of been in it, we've talked to a lot of creators, like, main focus is this now. Someone who's self-published or worked with, you know, Scout and other comic publishers, like, what is Kickstarter open up for you guys as creators, you think? And has it changed at all in the past year when a lot more people, unfortunately, you know, companies have gone to? But have you seen a change, and is this something that is becoming viable?
Yeah, I think there was a huge growth, especially over the pandemic. Lately, from other people I've talked to and what I've seen with this compared to Swan, it slowed down a little bit in the past couple months. People have had a rough summer who had campaigns. I know that I didn't launch as quickly as with Swan. It seems to have caught up a little bit, and hopefully there's a really strong second half. So I don't think, and I hope it hasn't played out so that it's going to be going down. I think maybe it's just a little blip over the summer, and especially new phase, maybe it's just... but otherwise, I think it's a wonderful platform. I think the majority of my backers are fan Kickstarter. Like, I've definitely got my solid people, return backers, friends and family, who you'd expect on the first one to be your primary customer. But even that first one, I think half of them are stranger, which is really cool. Like, people in Europe and Australia and everywhere around the world are picking up this book, happen to stumble across it, which without the platform able to reach. So yeah, it's just exposing my work to a whole new audience, meeting other creators, and they tip off this book to their backer. Maybe they cross over and check out your work. It definitely seems a viable option. Put work out here. Hopefully eventually earn a profit on it and keep making more.
I do always feel bad backing Canadian Kickstarter. It's like $30.
Yeah, only the shipping is ridiculous.
Well, then like you'll see the you'll see the price, but then like it will convert it to American, and it's like way less. I'm like, oh, that's like, does that matter? but yeah, it is not like, again, like having that ability too, like where like it's like this book's priced in Kronos, I don't know what that is, but then like it's so great because then like I can get it and I don't have to worry, figure it out on PayPal. We've talked, I've ordered comics from like Sweden and I'm trying to figure out shipping, converting it and sending it. I just want more comics. Kickstarter's not working. That's a bad, it freed up a lot of my funds to back or stuff like that. For anyone that does pick this up and get it in their hands, like what do you hope they kind of take away from their experiencing?
I hope they have fun. I mean, it's a really exciting story. I grew up on superheroes. I'd like to think they're not played out. I mean, you can see that with the Marvel movies. People love superheroes still. And I've got two young kids of my own. So having them be big Bullet fans, obviously they have to be. But to have other children, like, you know, running around pretending they're Bullet, like, I can't even imagine how cool that would be. So yeah, that's my end goal, is to make it known to the world. Let people enjoy the story and these characters. Dale and Joanna, if you don't fall in love with them, I'd be surprised, because they're just such lovable characters. You kind of get sucked into their romance as well. Yeah, I just want it to be out there and let everybody enjoy this whole story and wonderful characters and cool costume. You know, all the stuff that I loved about comics and hope is still out there for new readers to get hooked and stuff, just like I did.
And then, I mean, that's one of our biggest pushes, I mean, outside of horror, but also like we like fun. I want to say not goofy in the sense of like, I just like comics to be fun. And again, as someone with soon to be a 6, be able to read it and just pass it on,
yeah,
share in that moment. And again, I give me anything plus a day. Before I go into Tim's question, I did have another question, and I saved it to the end. Just, was Eskimo Kisses a one shot, or was a one shot, right?
It's a one shot, yeah, that's it.
Okay, all right. I want to make sure, because I sometimes with Scout, I'm like, I don't know if they're going to finish these books, but Eskimo Kisses.
The last page is set up as a possibility. It's kind of, it's all.
That was, by the way, if anyone listens, you throw Randy Christabella on something, that's all.
But I will. So here we got a supernatural horror story, and then the other things I've done are called Death in Comics and Crime Pays. So you can tell I'm like, yes, anxious to have stuff for my kids to read, because they're like, no, you can't see that. So with Swan and then now Bullet especially, is super kid friendly.
Well, listen, that's a smarter thing to do. Yeah, you can read that. That's fine. I've been like pushing. End of October, my old, and I've been like pushing, like, he can watch Trek. I don't know. And I was like, I went like opening night, but my dad was sure. Also someone who was like, I don't want to watch kid stuff.
I was watching Friday the 13th when I was 7. Yeah, my 10 and almost 7-year-old are not going to watch any of that.
Yeah, that's like I think I've mentioned that. Like my dad was, oh, you like Home, right? You like that Macaulay Culkin? I rented Good Son. You'll like that. We watched it. I was like, this is not Macaulay, but that is a good movie. But I will let Tim ask a question.
Right, so the gun to your head to write 2.5 minutes.
I've never watched a full episode. Somewhat aware of kid actor not being happy with went on in there, so I guess I'd probably approach it from that way. Maybe because we're a few 10 years off from when that ended. He's now a man. We'll call the episode Three Men. Yeah, honestly, I have no idea what that show's about. Charlie Sheen, weirdness.
I think it, I mean, piece together that it's the one's the dad. We ask these questions, we very little
Yeah,
know.
Ducky, yeah, and brother is, I don't really
I think so.
or something. I don't know. Since Tim, we used to ask, he would ask this with Big Bang for the new year. We switched it this past year that, and I swear to God, I go because I look for, I'm big on like trying to find like first edition hardcovers and stuff. So like, Salvation Army is a lot. I swear to God, all I've seen, we started the question like box everywhere, where I'm tempted, but I would never want it. And I've probably seen, but the more important thing isn't to watch Tim or George Lucas. It is to go out and watch and back Bullet. That would be
I would really like an
great.
animated
Yeah,
series, so yes, let's eventually watch Bullet.
I will say Cass art style is right up there. Throw that, but I think when you're listening to this, we're recording it first. It'll be that Friday. We'll have about 12 days to go. So if you go on Kickstarter under Bullets, we'll have everything linked. But go back at great project. Randy's got a great track record. I think that, like, I think what you need, like, a lot of times with Kickstarters now, if you go to like your creative projects, every one you've done, you've double, like, almost doubled people involved, like backers.
Yeah.
And that's like a clear sign of not only knows how to do Kickstarter, but also like quality. Again, I'm very excited for. And that important thing back at, you guys are ending September 16th, right?
16 late morning,
Nice.
it wraps up.
Stop.
Exactly.
But
Refresh, refresh.
oh, and if they want to find any more about, aside from the Kickstarter, any more about you.
I've got a Facebook group, facebook.com/altruistcomics. Altruist Comics is a Twitter handle, at Altruist Comics. My own personal Twitter, at Randy Stone, COTW. Tweet a bunch of nonsense, retweet a bunch of comic stuff. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Tim, what about you? And again, you know where to find the show. Stumble on Comic Book Podcast, panel. We are a panel on most stuff. I got talked back in a few more written interviews over at on there. Yeah, lost my train of holy shit. I was looking at the Kickstarter as I was talking about it. Yes, but a huge thanks to me for coming on behind the scenes. Randy jumped on from another interview. Bless the man out there doing the work. Talking to nerds all day. No one wants to do that.
Well, if people are happy to talk to me, I'm happy to talk to them. It's good.
Yeah, and thank you so much. Yes, and next project, anytime you come back. And thank you so much,
Definitely.
Randy.
Well, thanks for having
And
me.
Tim, I promise next time we will get back to you.